Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This week's episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, a full-service regulatory compliance consulting firm serving the ambulatory surgery industry, and Eden Group Development, publisher of the ASC Regulatory Compliance series of books by John Gailey.
Hello and welcome to the January 8th, 2018 edition of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. I'm Judy D'Ambrosio and I'm glad you're here with us. We have a lot to work on today, so let me tell you what's going to go on. We're going to start by talking about industry news, up and coming things that you need to be made aware of so that things don't happen without your knowledge. We're going to take a very deep dive into governing body meetings. How to write the minutes, how to have a successful meeting. John's going to help us with that. And of course, at the end, we're going to go over our listener questions. So remember, if you have any questions, please get in touch with us so that we can help you with what you need. Okay, so let's get into it. Again, this is the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. So with me here is John Gailey, our resident expert on everything ambulatory surgery center. And his biggest news for this week is that it is the week of the ASCA 2018 Winter Conference out in Las Vegas, which he will be attending. So, John, you work on the education committee for ASCA, don't you? What do you got going for us out there this year?
Sure. So we started planning this meeting probably about 6 months ago, and it's very exciting. There's actually three sections to it this year. Coding update and reimbursement strategy seminar, the infection control and prevention techniques for ASC seminar, and minimizing your regulatory and legal risk seminar. Now, the newest addition to this conference, this winter conference, is the infection control and prevention techniques for ASC seminar. That is where we're going to be introducing and starting the process of educating infection control preventists in preparation for the new CAIP credential, which the Board of Ambulatory Surgery Accreditation is introducing sometime later this year. So we're going to kick this off with a nice training program on infection control. I hope I hope to see a lot of our listeners out there.
Yeah, I hope you do. But you're actually teaching two of the sessions this year. What are you going to be talking about while you're there?
So I'm presenting two sessions. One on, it's called the Introduction to Revenue Cycle Management for Non-Financial Administrators. What we realize is a lot of our nursing staff in particular don't have a lot of training or a lot of knowledge about how the revenue cycle works. Because of course they were, taught largely nursing stuff in school. So we felt that it's probably about time that we do a nice introduction to that particular topic. And then my second session is going to be entitled Get More Done in Less Time Using an Improved Board Agenda. And that's why we thought today's episode should probably focus on governing body agendas, a very important topic, and I'm looking forward to presenting those two sessions.
That's fabulous. I'm glad that we worked those two to dovetail together in our podcast today. Okay, so we're going to move right into the news part of our podcast today, giving you some information on some new things that you need to be aware of. We have two pieces of news we're going to work on today, but the first one I'm going to let John take the lead on. This is a life safety kind of issue, and he's going to take care of that for us. What have you got?
Yeah, so January 1st, CMS began to require new requirements for fire and smoke detector tests, smoke door testing. This is regulation that's been around for a while, but the actual effective date was January 1st. And it's going to be something that impacts every single one of the surgery centers that that are listening to our podcast, obviously. And I thought I would bring a person very familiar with this on board here. He's Alex Borneman. He's the Director of Operations for Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, John.
So January 1st, we have to do some new things here in all of our centers. A major change, it seems, in regulation, but I think once we delve into it, it really is not quite as bad. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I think really what this comes down to is an increase in documentation. Really, it's going to be documenting the inspections that should already be done by the centers in their facility maintenance programs.
So when I first read this, I kind of interpreted that we were going to need to hire fire door experts to come in and do this testing. But I understand from you that that's not the case now, right?
Right. Actually, with the code requires functional testing of the fire door and window assemblies, that they're performed by individuals with knowledge and understanding of the operating components of the type of door being subject to the testing.
So I kind of hope that all of us, even people that are not in the AC industry, probably know how to use a door and what to look for to make sure it's not working. But so we don't need to hire somebody as an expert to come in if we just do some very basic checks, right?
Right. That's correct.
So can you talk about the different things that they're going to be looking for as part of this documentation?
Yeah. So there's actually 11 items minimum that, depending on the type of door that they'll be looking for. So some of those things, you know, open holes or breaks in the existing surfaces, really what they're going to be looking for is damage to the door, gaps between the door and the door jamb, making sure that the door operates the way it's supposed to, that all fire door components, open the door in the correct way.
So as a surveyor, I'm going to be expected to look at the documentation here to show that the organization is looking at their fire doors on a regular basis. And by the way, this is only fire doors, right? Not other doors in the center?
Right, right. This is just fire doors. So regular doors and smoke doors, those should be routinely inspected as part of the facility maintenance program, but they're not included in this NFPA 80 regulation.
Got it. Now, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to use the same type of checklist that you might be using to check these doors to check all the other ones just to make sure, right?
Yeah, definitely. That would be a good idea.
So I, as a surveyor, beginning January 1st, or as an organization expecting surveys after January 1st, the surveyors are going to be looking for this documentation. It should be done on an annual basis. It should be done by an individual, as you said, that's familiar with it. And you should maintain this documentation in your records, correct? What
section? Yeah, correctly.
Okay, so we should be keeping this as part of all of our environmental checklists, right?
Exactly.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us. I appreciate your time. And I'll tell you what, let's post that information up on our website, which is the website for our podcast is ascpodcast.com. And do you have a form that people can use also?
Yes, we do.
Oh, wonderful. So let's post that form also so that everyone will be able to use that or as an example.
Sure.
Thank you. Back to you, Judy.
Thanks, Alex. So our next little piece of news is something that came up new this week, or actually came up new a week or so ago, but came up again this week. And I'm going to turn this to John, too. It's about the clarification of how to use texting when talking about medical records or medical history.
Well, when CMS comes up with clarifications, they are supposed to actually clarify things. And then, so after this clarification came out, there was a clarification to the clarification, which just made things even more confusing. So I think the news right now, the original notification that came out said that we need to remind physicians when they are discussing patients that they should be using a secure portal. Unfortunately, the clarification to the clarification confused things even more. But I thought it would be a good time to kind of talk about this because clearly under HIPAA requirements, we have to be very careful about letting this information get out. And we all know just from the news that text messages are not exactly private. And it's very easy for somebody to get hold of it. Even if they got a hold of your cell phone, for example, you'd be able to see that. So text messaging is not an appropriate mechanism for communicating
any patient information
at all. So in this clarification, they brought up the topic of assuring that if you're going to text information, it has to be using a secure portal, which means it has to be some type of a text application that is encrypted.
But none of the, I shouldn't say none, but your average iPhone or Galaxy that you're using on a daily basis isn't going to be encrypted.
That's correct. The actual phone texting system is not going to be appropriate. You're going to want to use a third-party approved system, which hopefully your employer or organization will be able to do. But this is very important. There are a lot of HIPAA issues with letting that information get out. So I think even though the clarification didn't exactly clarify what was going on, I think that just using common sense here and recognizing the importance of maintaining patient privacy here just helps us to realize that maybe this is a good time to emphasize the use of encrypted texting mechanisms.
Well, thank you. You certainly made it more clear than the clarification did before you. So we certainly appreciate that. Okay, so we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to share with you our little episode on governing body. And we're going to talk a lot about how to have a successful governing body meeting and document successful governing body minutes.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the fourth quarter 2017 governing body meeting, whatever. Can we get on with this? It's been a very long day.
Sorry, Doctor, I was just making copies of the things we need to address today.
Don't bring up too many problems. These meetings take way too long as it is.
But, Doctor, the purpose of these meetings is to be sure that the center is moving in the right direction.
Well, we're making money, aren't we? Then we're moving in the right direction.
Great, is the meeting over now?
Come on, Docs. Some of the things on the agenda today are really important.
Okay, just get on with it.
Okay, all in favor of forgoing the reading of the minutes from last meeting and accepting the minutes as written?
We had a meeting last month?
Was I here last month?
I don't remember that meeting.
Wait, was there a disbursement last month?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, please, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, moving on. Dr. Kildare, would you like to give the president's report?
Huh?
The president's report, it's where you tell the board how the center is doing, how things are going, how we're doing financially.
Well, we'd be doing a whole lot better if we didn't spend so much money on stupid things.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Well, I see people changing their gloves way too often. We're going through surgical scrub like water, and I keep seeing the nurses replacing sharps containers that still have plenty of room left in them. And those nurses, have you noticed, guys, that they're sitting around
that lounge? You're kidding, right?
They're talking
doing
all the time.
He's not.
On Facebook.
I mean, really, why can't the surgical techs wear their scrubs like a few days in a row?
Or even better yet, do we really need the surgical techs? I mean, we pay these nurses an awful lot of money. They could work a little bit harder.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all of you, please, try to be realistic. There's a fine line between making money and making a mess.
I don't understand it.
Does she think that we're made of money or something?
Money grows on trees. Yeah.
Okay, moving on again. We have a survey coming up.
Well, don't even start with the idea of hiring a consultant again like we did the last time. I'm not paying for it.
We need some help, Dr. Kildare. We're not going to pass the survey with our current equipment, or staff, or our documentation.
What's the matter with our equipment?
We spend a lot of money on the things we have now.
Well, we've been told that the C-arm will not survive another preventative maintenance.
It doesn't need maintenance. The duct tape is holding up just fine.
Oh, I give up.
Well, John, I'd never actually been to a governing body meeting. And I'm wondering, I need to ask you if that's about what I would expect in a real one.
Well, unfortunately, I've attended a number of board meetings that are like that. So, that was probably closer to reality than fiction, shall we say.
Well, I'm going to make the assumption that is not how you would suggest a governing body meeting be held or by the standard it should be held to. How can you help us do better than this?
So, again, this gets back to the presentation I'm doing at ASCA 2018 Winter Conference here on how to make your board meeting more efficient, how to make, and my whole goal there is to help doctors be a little bit more engaged in the process. And I think we could see in that scenario that we laid out there that the doctors were not engaged, that they, you know, this was something they just had to do. And what I think is important about governing body meetings is that we don't spend a lot of time talking about things that everybody already knows. Because, you know, it's already been put in front of them. What we want to talk about is those things that they need to make a decision about and need to document it. For surveyors such as myself who goes and surveys organizations on a regular basis, one of the requirements is that we see that they have an active and engaged governing body. The only way that I as a surveyor can determine that is by looking at the governing body minutes. I don't attend the board meetings, of course, but I do read the minutes. So those minutes need to reflect the actions that are taking place during those board meetings. And they also reflect what is important to that organization. So if I'm reading a set of minutes that 90% of the minutes talk about the last distribution and how much money the organization made, and how the equipment is too expensive and they don't want to spend any more money for it, that's not going to leave a good impression. So one of the recommendations I make for the board meetings is start off right into the clinical issues, right into quality improvement, and then save the financial stuff for the back part of it.
Oh, that's good thinking.
So I like to set an agenda for the meeting that starts with a review of the Quality Improvement Committee meeting, the most recent Quality Improvement Committee meeting. Now, but that doesn't mean just reading the minutes, because that doesn't help. It doesn't point out the important topics that the board has to deal with. So you don't want to waste too much time. Maybe they can read the minutes, but those quality improvement meetings are going to have action items that are going to require follow-up by the governing body. So let's say that you have an incident involving a patient that resulted in your changing a policy. Well, the only part of the organization that can change that policy is the governing body. So in the meeting, you're going to briefly discuss the incident without any details and why you've decided to change that policy, and then you vote on the change in the policy. Likewise, if you've had to terminate an employee or if you had to, you know, discipline an employee, you don't mention the very specifics of it, but you do mention what the governing body, what the administration did, and then the governing body, reacted to it and, of course, oversaw the whole process there. You want to document that in the meeting minutes. Be very careful, however, that you don't breach any confidentiality. Remember, the information that shows up in the governing body meeting is discoverable, unlike the information that's in a quality improvement meeting.
Okay, I see. Also, from now, quality improvement is also a meeting that happens quarterly, and they're long, and they have a lot of issues that they discuss. So you're saying that just to pull out those ones that require the board's attention.
That's correct. That's correct. And, you know, I see it both ways. Sometimes I attend governing body meetings where they go into great detail about the quality improvement committee. In repeating everything that happened during that meeting. And that really, of course, that's a very quick way of getting the doctors to stop listening and start texting. But that's not a very effective use of their time. We want them to focus on those things that have to have governing body action so that we can document in the meeting that the follow-up was done.
Okay. And then once we've gone through the quality improvement and we've talked about those things that need to be addressed, now, where should whoever's running the meeting, in what direction should they move it from there?
So there's going to be obviously financial issues we talked about. There's going to be environmental issues or equipment issues that you're going to have to deal with. And a lot of those are driven indeed by quality. You want to document that. During this meeting, they're talking about the C-arm that was held together, it sounds like, with duct tape. And that sounds like a piece of equipment that it's time to replace. And certainly the ongoing preventive maintenance, as the administrator Adele mentioned, needs to be done, indicated that it's not going to pass the next preventive maintenance. So the governing body should be talking about the new equipment they're going to have. They're going to have to, hopefully Adele will have brought some proposals in front of them for this new equipment. And a time frame for implementing it. And so if the surveyors were to show up the next day, at least you'd be able to show in the minutes that something's being done about that equipment, and that you're addressing a quality issue very directly.
Okay, that's a good point, because you're right. If the day after the board meeting, you do happen to have a surveyor that says, well, this is completely unacceptable, at least Adele has the opportunity to say, we're aware of it, and here they are in my minutes, so you know that we're taking steps.
Precisely.
So that's very good. Okay, so beyond equipment and your quality, is there really a president's report like there was in our scenario?
Yeah, that's a good point. So what I like to do in my meetings is I try to put all of the reports at one point. Just like in this meeting here, I often start off the meeting with this and then we go into quality improvement. But we're not focusing on the financial side of it. We're just talking about what's happened in the last, you know, couple months here. What is important? Maybe bring up some regulatory changes if that's effective during that quarter so that the governing body is kept up to date and we can document again all of those things that they need to update. Frankly, like in the situation where the doctor said, huh, you know, because he didn't know what, that he had to do a report, that unfortunately is probably frequently the case. They're not often able to jump into it. And then I, as the administrator or as a consultant would step in and say, doc, can you mention such and such? For the governing body here, and then that'll help them, prompt them to talk about that subject.
We noticed in this scenario that the doctors did not seem at all engaged and didn't care to hear about anything beyond their disbursement or the financial well-being of the center. Any advice on how you're going to keep these doctors, not so much the medical director, because he has quite a big role on the board, but the other doctors, how do you keep them engaged and wanting to be involved in this?
Well, certainly engaging them in discussion and talking about the changes that need to be done, which you have to do for the governing body, you know, for governing body purposes anyway, is one way to engage them. Do not sit there. I mean, I can't tell you the number of meetings over my life I've attended where it's just the administrator talking through all of the things that everyone in the room already knows about. They'll talk through the incidents. They'll talk things, you know, through things that that are at the top of everybody's mind already. That's not a good use of their time. So a better use of the time. And I really do feel that this is the administrator's responsibility here to structure these meetings appropriately so that things move quickly and that that administrator engages them in a dialogue and helps them to focus on those things that are very pertinent to them. Make the meetings more engaging, make the meetings more pertinent to their lives, help them to understand the cost ramifications of any of the changes that are going on and the quality ramifications, obviously, of course, not in that order. The quality ramifications should be first and the financial second. And then, of course, documenting these in a good set of minutes.
Do you often help people? Like, I know you work with a lot of clients. Do you offer them like a nice set of agenda minutes? I mean, a way to make this look really good.
Yeah, well, so that brings up another interesting topic, doesn't it? Is like who writes the minutes? And I talked about this, you know, before the podcast today, because there are some situations where the administrator records the meeting and then has a secretary or administrative assistant, I guess you would say now, who actually types those things up. And I would not recommend that. Clearly, an average person who doesn't understand the requirements of the governing body of minutes documentation is not going to understand what needs to be included in those minutes and what needs to be excluded. So, in one of my books, the governance book, which is available on Amazon, we talk about governing body meetings and how to run them. And we give an example agenda and actually an example set of minutes for that. And I think that's one way that you can be very, people can look and see what other organizations are doing.
And these minutes become very important down the line when you've had a survey or you need to document that something was discussed.
As I mentioned earlier, they're the only documentation you really have of the governing body actions. So they are critical, not only for surveys, but also for legal purposes afterwards or to document it, you know, have a historical perspective on what was going on in the meeting. For example, one of the other things that you have to do on a regular basis is appoint all the officers and directors of the organization. So, you know, the medical director, the administrator, the pharmacy director, et cetera. So as a surveyor, when I go in, I ask questions about who these individuals are and when they were appointed. And if you appointed those, you know, 5-10 years ago, are you going to be able to find those minutes quickly?
Probably see what you're saying.
So what I recommend there, and I think a lot of us as surveyors recommend for these organizations, that you do an annual reappointment of everybody so that you can just look at one meeting out of the year and know that the appointments have all been done.
That's some good advice. Okay, well, for those of you that have the opportunity to fly to Vegas to listen to John give this talk in person, I'm envious, but good for you. And for those of you that cannot, at least we've been able to touch on some of those things that you'll need to know to have a nice, successful governing body meeting and to have effective and successful minutes.
Absolutely. And please remember, well, first of all, if you're in Vegas, make sure you you find me and say hi and tell us what you're thinking about our podcast here and give us some suggestions for the future.
Thank you. Well, we're back, and we have reached that time of the podcast where we delve into those questions sent to us by listeners. So, our listener question for today is, Dear John, it's come to my attention that I need to have external benchmarking for my center. I need it for quality improvement and other things, but I have no idea where to find it. Are there really requirements where I need to have this, and do you have any idea where I might start?
So, actually, I speak about this quite a bit at ASCA conferences, and external benchmarking is indeed one of the major requirements both in CMS and in the accreditation standards for both AAHC and Joint Commission. So, external benchmarking is a requirement, but there's no specificity as to what type of external benchmarking needs to be done. So that leaves us with quite a number of options, some that are inexpensive and some that are can be, you know, very expensive. Now, I have to put a plug in for the ASC Association here. I've worked with them over the many years and indeed was involved in some of the financial benchmarks that are included in their ongoing study or their ongoing benchmarking activity. So if you're a member of the ASC Association, you can participate in the Outcomes Monitoring Program for a small fee. Even if you're not a member, you can still participate. I believe the fee is a little bit larger. And that's a very good product. So you log on every quarter. You upload information and data from your organization, and then you get a report back very quickly that compares your organization against other organizations. What I find, though, is not everybody is a member of ASCA. I encourage them to be a member. But if they're not, what can they do? So, first of all, many state associations also, or some state associations also have benchmarking products. Certainly look at that and consider participating in that. But many a lot of benchmark data can be obtained from other sources. So, for example, ASCQuality.org is an organization that we use frequently. They have very, basic benchmarks that you can use. But as I said, CMS and the accreditation organizations don't actually tell you where to get the benchmarking data or what type of benchmarking data. They only indicate that you should be using benchmarking as part of your regular activities.
Okay, just a few more questions. How often do they have to go through this benchmarking activity?
So again, there are no specific requirements for the frequency that you're going to do benchmarking. I encourage this to be done on a regular basis, however. But if you miss a couple quarters, you can't get the data submitted to the organization, or you can't you don't have an opportunity to do that during the quarter. There really is no particular issue with that. Just it becomes more difficult once you forget one quarter to remember to do it in subsequent quarters.
That makes sense. You also mentioned in the beginning that it is a requirement, and that's why we certainly want to spend time on the activity. But you said that there's some interesting facts we can find out about ourselves and about our center by doing this.
Yeah, I'm actually quite passionate about benchmarking because one of the things that I learned over my many years in the business is that once you become successful, the doctors are always trying to find ways to save money, make more money, and benchmarking can answer some of those tough questions. You know, it always seems to me that they're going to come back. A very common question is, well, how does my staffing compare? You know, I seem to be spending an awful lot of money on staffing here. How do my staffing numbers compare to other organizations? So there's a lot of great information available. The ASC Association Outcomes Monitoring Program, for example, does have a particular statistic on the amount of money you spend on staffing. And I think if you were able to compare yourself against those numbers, you might be able to answer some of those questions that the doctors inevitably ask about whether you're overstaffed or understaffed, et cetera.
So see, some things that are regulated that you do actually work in your benefit in the long run, don't they?
Absolutely. Well, and I think first of all, a lot of changes are occurring with regard to quality and benchmarking here. We're required to submit information to Medicare, for example, as part of the Medicare Quality Reporting Program. And that information is, it comes back to us. For example, acquality.org, which I mentioned earlier, is the website where a lot of that information ends up. And comparing yourself against the benchmarking information will help to show what a good organization you are, how the quality is for your organization. So not only should we be doing this for CMS purposes, but using it to make sure, you know, we are as good as we say we are to our patients. Benchmarking is a great tool for improvement too. So if you look and you see that your organization has longer wait times than other organizations, maybe you can look into ways to say, you know, to decrease that by looking at this data and delving into that data.
Well, that's good information. Thank you. That was a good answer. And thank you very much for the listener that sent the question in. And remember, we're here. Send us those questions. We want to bring you the information you need. And thank you, John. Again, wonderful podcast. And please try to tune in again. We're here every week with information that is pertinent to you.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. Our other sponsor today is Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including The Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage, and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring with the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.